Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today. Hey everyone, welcome to Web Culture here on WMR.FM. It is the 14th of May, 2026, which basically means May is like halfway over, and it just sort of began like just a couple of days ago, it seems. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media, Christine Chackinger from Sites Without Walls.
Hey everybody!
And it's been a really, really busy week. There's a whole bunch of stuff to get through. We don't have a three-hour show for you this week. Like, last week, we had a three-hour show.
No, last week was 2 hours. I just looked at the time.
What's it? Are you sure?
Yeah, positive.
Okay. Yeah. Like 3 hours. Okay. Like three before hours. We get in, I do want to take a little bit of time to say thanks to Wix Studio and to Audience Key, our two sponsors. Check them both out. Wix Studio will save you like hours of time when you're making really quick websites, when you're doing landing pages, and when you want to optimize for SEO on the fly. Wix Studio is an incredible tool. Similarly, Audience Key, incredible writing tool, incredible tool to get a sense of what your audience is really, really getting into when it comes to your content. And it's actually got a really cool new tool that will track product on the SERP grid. You get to know where your stuff is on the new shopping grids. Okay. So as it turns out, Google Search Console is not reporting traffic this time from Google Discover and from a really limited date range, May 7th and May 8th. If you see a massive dip in your Discover traffic, it's them, not you.
Yes, although I don't know how you tell, because Discover also often has massive dips. But yes, you're missing it. Don't worry.
Well, yeah, I mean, it really depends on the industry you're in. We're going to be talking about publishers in a few minutes, and like Discovery is often publishers' like last hope these days, eh?
Yeah, it is. Discover does. Never mind. Go ahead. Go ahead.
So Google. So yeah. Anyway, if you're desperate for Discover traffic and you see that dip on the 7th and the 8th, average out what's happening for the rest of the week. That's a probably way better indicator of what your traffic's actually like. Google Ads going to require a passkey for sensitive actions after July 15th. What's that about?
Yeah, they're just moving to, I don't know if you've noticed, a lot of times you log in now and they're like, do you want to use passkey? So if you're doing something to in your account that can lead to like where the money is, you know, where your billing is or things of that nature, they want to make it harder for hackers to get to because they've had a big problem with that. So it's just going to be asking you to use passkey. You'll have to use it by June 15th. Yes. And everyone got a note that just says Google works behind the scenes to block countless steps before they reach your account. But that strongest defense starts with you. So it won't be passwords anymore. It'll just be the pass key. They will show you how to set it up. Pretty easy. Usually, just once you set it up with Google, you just click on it, and it just logs you in instead of having to put in a password. So it's easier.
Okay. Google has been going after webmasters who were abusing the back button. There's ways to set the button so that it doesn't actually take you back to the page you've been previously on, or perhaps takes you to a page, takes you to a different page altogether. If you do that, Google's going to be awfully mad at you because that isn't the way the back button is supposed to work. But ironically, Google Ads sent vignette ads had a back button problem of its own.
Yeah, so the Google recently introduced a policy against back button hijacking. This is from SEO Roundtable. So basically, your website's are scripts interfere with the user's ability to just use the back button to navigate backwards. But weirdly enough, Google's ads was doing that with the vignette ads. because the ad side and the search side don't talk to each other is what their actual explanation was. So now it is fixed and you do not have to worry about using your vignette ads. And getting a manual
Mostly because
access.
vignette ads no longer have that back button issue.
Right. Yes, they took it away. And it is a manual action you'll receive. So make sure your Google Search Console is hooked up and that you're checking it. If you have any back button issues, because they will tell you in your messages in Google Search Console. If you don't have that set up, you might never see it. So.
Okay. Google Ads API version 24.1 is now available. It's released. It's a minor release, but it has a dozen updates or more. Features like mobile device platform segment, classic images and demand gen, support for passkeys, and revamped support of experiments, new support for and support for data's new or Google's new data retention policies.
Yeah, this is another SE Roundtable article. I always love how he puts every update in the opening paragraph because there's so many. But we don't go through these just because there's a lot and people just need to read it. So go ahead and check that out if you're using API for Google Ads.
Okay, speaking of stuff people need to read, good refresher course all the time. And interestingly, Ryan Jones,
We know Ryan.
Vice President of Search at I have the regular guest on Webcology and Vice President of Search at Sapient Razorfish. So Ryan's at a search conference. I'm guessing this was a SEO week in New York. Just
It
based on the
was.
timing of when he wrote this,
Yeah,
and he
it
was stunned by how many people there didn't actually understand how search engines work.
I think that's one of the big problems right now. Same with LLM, same thing, but people don't actually know how search works. So it's easy to like create a theory and then not understand it doesn't work in the actual process of what Google does. So this is a really good refresher article from Ryan.
That's
Ryan is a friend, but I decided that this article. It's going to have a new weekly feature. If we have an article that should be highlighted, we're going to mention it. This is
Yeah,
a really good
absolutely.
one. Yeah, this is a really good one that helps you understand how search works. It's simple enough for anyone to understand, and anyone in SEO should read this because I think most people, even myself, who have not read about it in, a year or two ago, I wouldn't read it, because I wanted to make sure I remembered everything properly. So,
Well, I mean, Christine, there's a gajillion one things to remember as an SEO, and it's piling on all the time. Refresher courses aren't just important; they really should be mandatory. It's like a discipline thing.
It really
So
is.
Ryan recently published Serpicon, a semantic SEO to SEO or AI LLMs tool. And on the Serpicon blog, he's been publishing a lot about how search engines work, how his metrics work, how LLMs work, etc. This one, how a search engine works, again, might seem like basic reading, but Ryan is constantly updating himself. And it's a refresher course that everyone should take.
Yeah, if you don't know what a BM25 is or cosine relevance, you should really make sure you read it because they are crucial right now in the world of AI search and even Google's AI overviews because it's about your semantic relevancy. So definitely read the article.
And yet another reminder of why we don't let engineers name stuff.
I know, right? Really?
BM25, I mean,
Yes.
wait till you're 55, buddy.
Yeah, and cosine relevance, which just means your nouns are related to each other, ice and tea. As opposed to meat tea, which would never be a thing, I hope. So.
Okay, so one of the problems with ICE, among 100 other problems with the new Immigration Customs Enforcement Unit of the Trump regime, is they're widely poorly trained, so poorly trained that they are storing lists of tens of millions of people on their iPhones. And they're doing this through software that was made for them by the Trump regime's, main backer, Peter Thiel,
And Palantir.
the owner of Palantir.
Yeah.
So,
Oh, go ahead.
well, they can go through investigative They can do an investigation that used to take hours in minutes using the AI on Palantir and such, but the storage of so much information of so many people in such a wildly unsecure way is terrifying.
Well, and also just the idea that they're using this. So they have 20 million targets or potential people to detain on their phones. They can also use facial recognition. This is a story I didn't add, but it's just extra bit of information. They're going to now start using Meta's Ray-Ban tools, their glasses, to identify people and compare them to that database. None of this should be legal, but unfortunately, right now it is. Palantir is in general, people should know about this firm and start keeping up with it because it is involved in a lot of surveillance technology. So this is part of a tool called Enhanced Lead Identification and Targeting for Enforcement from 404 Media, called Elite. And it populates a map with potential deportation targets, brings up a dossier on each person with their personal information, provides a confidence score on that person's current address, and those come from various sources of information. And they're all on an app on their phone. In addition, out of the people they've arrested, overall, in the United States, 70% have no prior criminal issues. And in Minnesota, it was 90%. So these aren't criminals that they're targeting, like, because they did something bad and here we know where they are. That's a lot of information to have on people. And they have it on all of us, too. They're working on a massive database for that. So I put this
Well,
story in here
that's
for
already
the.
been accomplished. That was very likely the information stolen by Doge last year.
Very true.
As compiled, and incidentally, that's not just on Americans, stored in American databases and American government databases. There's a great deal of information on anyone who, say, ever applied for a visa or traveled through the United States. So, enormous dossiers on American citizens and also on foreign citizens have been kept and are obviously available to, immigration, customs, and enforcement agents on their cell phones. 20
Yeah,
million, you say.
and the idea is to be able to do raise and identification faster. But also, we should point out that this kind of facial recognition technology gets less and less accurate the darker the skin gets. So if you're someone who's a person of color, it is much more likely to not identify the person correctly.
I
So.
dare say ICE's both understanding and caring for legalities also get less and less accurate the darker the
Yeah.
color of someone's skin.
Well, that's true too. We know that because most of the people arrested have no criminal history whatsoever.
Well, and also because the Trump regime is outright and visibly
Yes.
racist. It goes out of its way to
Yes.
do racist things and say
And
racist things and have a racist policy being enforced by thugs who go under the banner of ICE.
to that end, yesterday, for anyone who's like, oh, is he really? Well, on the White House account, they posted there wouldn't be white replacement. White replacement is a neo-Nazi theory about white people being replaced by people of color. It is total bovine stuff. But it was put on the White House site yesterday, so not even hiding it anymore, the racist
No,
intent.
they haven't been hiding it since 2016. It's just they get constantly forgiven and forgotten over and over and over and over and over again. But it hasn't been hidden. It's been very blatant.
Well, I think to you and me it is blatant, but they've been vague enough that the people who want to believe
No,
it,
they've
they're
been out front.
not.
They've been totally out front. People
I
just
agree. I think
choose
so.
not to believe it. They just choose.
That's true.
It's honestly, it's crazy, really.
Yeah,
Delusion.
I don't know. Yes.
Okay,
So,
moving
okay.
forward, moving
So a
along.
positive, there's a positive area, I think, from the abyss. We don't usually get positive
It
stories.
is, it may or may not be a positive thing,
That's
depending on
true.
which side you fall on. Colorado, the state government in Colorado was changing a sweeping artificial intelligence law that was passed 2 years ago because it has a chilling effect on business. Two years ago, Senate Bill 205 was passed that would have a Senate Bill 205 would have had a chilling effect on attracting businesses to Colorado and actually ran a few of them off because it messages Colorado was not open for business, said Senate Minority Leader Lisa Frizzell. So this change very likely will draw more data centers to Colorado.
Well, except that the two bills aimed at the construction of data centers failed at that time, so they have not decided on what's going to happen with data centers. The data centers, the worst part about them is they're selecting areas where people are poor, there's not a lot of water or power to be used, on top of the fact that they're environmentally destructive. What's weird, I'll tell you, because I live in Las Vegas, we have a company called Switch here, and they have hundreds of data centers here, and they don't have a negative effect on anything because they've developed patents, so they deliver more water back to the community than they take, and their power, they do a lot of solar, so it gets returned to the grid, and they do a lot of really positive things, and they're literally one of the hubs of the internet at this point. And these other data centers that want to come in, they just want to just come in and just, just like destroy land, take over land. There's a big thing in Utah where Kevin Leary wanted to take all this land over in Utah, and they voted no, but then the state gave it to him anyways.
Yeah,
So
that
data
is for the
centers.
data center larger than, I believe, Manhattan.
Yes, actually, I think it's bigger, 8 times bigger than Manhattan, but I'm not 100% sure if I remember that correctly. So yeah, so they're coming in for these data centers that take a tremendous amount of resources, negatively impact the environment tremendously at a time when we can't be doing that. And but they don't have to be built that way. If you ever go to a tour of Switch, it's built completely different than any other data center, and they use natural air mostly to cool, as opposed to raised floors with AC.
So
So
just to be
if they can be
straight,
built differently, they don't have to be built like old tech.
this data center will be built in Montana, you suggest? You said
No,
the O'Leary
this
one?
is Utah.
Oh, Utah. Yeah, well, Utah residents should definitely be made aware that what's
It's
happening inside that data center is 8 times more degenerate than what they think is happening in Manhattan.
probably true.
Guarantee it.
Yeah, probably true. But it is a big issue. We'll talk about more in the future as more and more of these things come up. But it is something people should be aware of in their localities, and to make sure that the data center isn't going to do things like, and some of the poor areas have blackouts now because they don't have enough power because the data center took so much power. And
Well, not just the
those
poor
days.
areas, sometimes fairly well-off areas. I understand that the 50,000 residents of Lake Tahoe have just been made, well, literally powerless as Con Edison
No,
turned
not
the
Con
switch
Edison.
over towards the data center rather than over to them.
Not Con Edison. Nevada Energy. They're my power company.
Oh, really? Okay, so Nevada Energy turned off the residents of Lake Tahoe and refocused that
Not yet.
energy.
They
To
will in a,
oh,
it will be in a
in a year.
year, but yes, it will be refocused. And I don't know what they're going to do because, as far as I know, I don't live up there, but in my area of Nevada, there is no other power supply company.
So the inventive people of Lake Tahoe have a year to get a nuclear power plant together, is what you're
Or
saying.
get power from California because they're right there on the border.
No, I think they
But,
should build their own nuclear power plant. They really should. Be adventurous, Tahoe. Go for it.
But it is really horrible that that's happening. But apparently, part of the problem is Northern Nevada let themselves become a big data center area for Google, Microsoft, other companies. So they kind of set this in motion themselves. But it isn't okay that they're just going to, hey, we're just turning out power. Now, I am a customer of Nevada Energy. And I was wondering why we weren't getting charged for all these data centers like in other areas, because we don't get charged for Switch. They've been here 20 years, never been charged because of Switch. But they're going to take their 15 most active minutes in your house a day, and that is going to become your actual 24-hour bill. So for 15 minutes, your power goes way up. That's going to be what they set your bill on. And I was wondering, where does this even come from? Now I know they have to pay for the data centers.
So
That's
don't
why.
ever turn on the coffee machine and the laundry machine and the microwave at the same time,
Oh,
is
it's
what you're
crazy.
saying.
I actually looked at mine. You can look at ours on the dashboard, and it shows you when it goes up, and it went up for like 2 hours, and I did nothing different in that 2 hours. So I have no idea, but it went up a lot, like by 4 times. It's insane. Yeah. Anyway, so that
Okay,
kind of, we kind of went off course there, but let's go. Bring it around.
moving
Bring
along
it back.
to drawing from all of those data centers, a study's been done by the provincial auditor general in the Canadian province of Ontario. Ontario Auditor General Shelley Spence found that during a study of a broader probe of artificial intelligence use across the public service of the province, she found that the note takers being used by Ontario doctors were providing wildly inaccurate and incomplete information. They had hallucinations, and more importantly, their output wasn't being evaluated properly. So people's medical charts were being populated with very confident but wrong AI slop.
Yeah, and the problem is that the doctors don't have time to review it either. So, they may get AI slop and base recommendations on the AI slop and not realize it. And so you can't ever fix the hallucination problem according to the AI industry, all the research from Apple and MIT and everything. So I don't know why we keep putting it in places where your money or your life, as Google would say, is at stake. So.
I can say in the province of Ontario, because we have a spendthrift and often intellect thrift conservative provincial government that is literally starving the healthcare system because it wants to privatize the public model system.
That makes me sad for
So
you
we don't
guys.
have enough doctors to cover the floor. They turn to AI to try to lighten the workload. Now we don't have enough doctors to cover evaluating the AI or the output of the AI. So yeah,
Yeah.
it's a vicious circle.
It is, it is.
Okay. This is, I think, a report and a short video that I think everyone should have a chance to watch. It's being reported at Search Engine Land. The CEO of Condé Nast, the publishing empire, CEO Roger Lynch, was interviewed on the Tech Media Network, TBPN, and talked about at least from a publisher's point of view, what really feels like the death of the effectiveness of search, at least for his business. So much so that at the last board meeting, CEO Lynch told every other board member and every other director, plan for a future where search isn't part of our revenue stream.
Yeah, this made me sad because actually, okay, Barry Adams, who's done many major publishers, wrote an article about 3 weeks ago that said, the zero click thing is kind of not a thing. It is definitely down on regular organic, but it kind of made me sad because I don't feel like he's getting proper advice. And I don't know who's advising him. So if you are the person, I apologize. If you are giving proper advice, it's just not being listened to. But if in this case, there are other opportunities to appear in search, in those plot pieces that he believes are taking the search away. Now, the AI overviews is different. You can't necessarily fix that, but there's the user-generated content, hidden gems, there's the videos, there's the short videos, there's using things like LinkedIn and social media to get in those spaces. So there's a lot of other spaces in that page where you can get it in. And that's the with the clients I work with, that's what we're doing. We're creating multiple types of content on multiple platforms. You're right, Google search won't necessarily be for a publisher their main search, but it's not going to be close to zero search. It's not going to be a non-revenue generator. As we know, Google keeps experimenting even with clicks and AI overviews, and they're getting better again. We'll see if it sticks. But it does make me sad because to have such a fatalistic outlook
Well,
is,
to quote
yeah.
Lynch, and there's data behind his doubt. Each of the last 3 years, we do our budgets, then we put some forecasts in of search traffic declining, and every year it was down even more than we forecast. So he goes through, what it used to be. You used to see some sponsored links and then 10 sponsored results and then 10 blue links. Now you see row upon row upon row of commercial link. Almost to the point where you scroll down to what would be the equivalent of second page, and that's where the first of the organic links begin. And you're
No,
right,
I
Christine, there's
agree.
a bunch of other places for them to appear,
Yes, I agree with
but
that part. Just,
they're not getting the clicks.
well, I don't think
Not
they're
back to their
doing.
websites anyway, where the ad revenues are made.
Well, we don't know that they're actually targeting the other places to get clicks on the page, is what I'm saying. So I like when I see a client is getting a lot of AI overviews, but we don't know that, Jim. We don't
They're
know if
going
they're.
for ad revenue. They want the click. There's no other reason.
Right, but I'm not saying maybe they most clients I talk to aren't aware of hidden gems in the UCG spot, right? Most clients aren't aware they need a watch page for their videos to show up on page one. So I'm just saying that it is possible that She's only looking at organic as the one place on the page, not all the other places on the page where organic can appear. So Barry Adams has talked about this as well, because when he wrote the article against this concept of zero click search, like a month ago, 3 weeks to a month ago, that's pretty much what he said as well. So I'm not saying this if the CEO doesn't know these things. I'm just saying if he's seen decline after decline after decline, then you have to broaden your approach, and part of being an SEO is also understanding where those other spaces are that you can appear.
In a way, I do think he understands that. He does talk about the great advantage that Condé Nast has is human-created content. They tend to stray away from AI-generated content, he says. But he does believe that AI-generated slop will ultimately be helpful to premium publishers because it'll teach users to trust brands that don't use it.
That's true too. And we do see more. I see on the, I just say on the socials, this is anecdotal, but I see more and more people talking about sites that used AI slop losing their traffic. And I see more and more of that on LinkedIn. I saw like at least three people this week post about it, about studies they've done, small studies with clients or where they know they've used AI. I also know somebody looked at a company that uses AI, programmatic AI, and found that all their clients are down. So I'm not going to say who, I'm not going to call that out, but just saying that that AI content, I think Google's going out after now more aggressively, but they're doing it with de-indexing your pages in the Google Search Console, where they do discovered, not crawled, unknown to Google, and crawled, not indexed, right? So, but anyways, I do think it's, I don't think publishers should take from this that you are going to zero click is what I'm saying. I think you definitely are losing clicks. I think there are other though, methods of increasing that click value. Like the head of The Atlantic does a video, used to do a video every day on LinkedIn, and then those videos appeared on YouTube and they appeared on all these other channels. And his stuff is some of the most watched, right, out there. And so he would like give these summaries on ideas and concepts, and then you would go read the magazine. So by the way, Condé Nast is not down. Their subscriptions are up, they're making more money than ever with Vogue. They're just finding Google search. And this is a message to Google too. You could make the AI overviews much more clickable than you do. And the more you do this, the more ad revenue Google's going to lose because they won't see any use in Google. So Google has to be careful of that too. They've been trying to get everyone to stay in the AI overviews, and I don't think it was a smart business decision in the long term. Short term, sure, in
I
the
mean,
long term.
also there's the obvious comment, if you make it harder to create new content. If you make it harder to report on things or to share information with the public because you just can't make a living doing it anymore, Google, you make it harder to create the really premium training materials that your AIs desperately need to learn from.
Definitely.
And you will dead internet yourself.
You can read more about this. The CEO actually talked about it on LinkedIn, and then Search Engine Journal and Search Engine Land both did articles on it. So.
Okay, so Google is using its AIs to disrupt hackers now. I guess it, caught the bug from Anthropic and Mythos and said we're claiming to get in on this action too. Google said it observed a group of prominent threat actors planning an operation, relying on a bug they'd found, allowing them to bypass two-factor authentication, and it burned them. It contacted law enforcement and the affected company that was about to get burned, and went after the, it. Apparently, went after. Did they catch them? Did they actually take down the hackers at the end of it all?
I don't know if they took the hackers themselves down. I mean, they blocked the hack. Also, the hack was created with AI, which was another point Google was making, that this is the first major attack they've seen threaten their systems with using AI to help them. Like AI hacking has been going on for a while, but to attack Google on two-factor authentication is like a massive undertaking. So they find out that they use AI. So I don't know that they actually arrested people. I'm going to say I don't think so because I haven't seen anything about that in the article I read. Also, interestingly enough, there's two reports on the same thing. One says it was Google Gemini that was used against them, but in this article they say Google denied that Gemini was used. So I don't know which. They're not saying what model was used. So But yeah, this is going to be the story, though.
But please rest assured, it was Gemini that we used to stop the attack. Gemini
Yeah.
doesn't do bad stuff. It only does good stuff. Only
Exactly.
ever, really.
And also, I just want to put out a warning to people. So I know a couple, like people in our industry who told me today, one of the people, that they have AI agents running on their computer. They don't even know what they do. They just let them do everything all day. The hackers are going to start with the big guys, right? Like they always do when a new technology comes out. So they, you know, we know the Mexican government got hacked, and you know, there's other big entities that were hacked using AI and using chat and agents. And just be careful, because when the hackers are done with the big guys and they learn how to scale the attacks, that's when they go after your WordPress login on every site that exists, right? Like if you were use WordPress, you know that you have to hide that login because they'll find it and use it. So I'm just saying, just be careful if you're using it on your computers. Don't let it just run willy-nilly, because when they do get to that point, you probably won't know it till something happens.
Something that a lot of people in the SEO industry might want to think about too. I'm not sure who you were talking to get that antidote, Christine, but think of some of the customers you've worked for in the last couple of years, the size or scope of them. I've had some clients over the last few years that were mind-numbing in size and importance. And if I was ever the vector that was used by a hacker to get into one of my clients' accounts, I would never live that down. You know what I mean?
Oh,
So
well,
if you got all these agents running on your computer and you're not entirely positive what they're doing, but they're doing a good job, so you just let them on do it, you could be the target yourself, or you could be the entryway to a much bigger target if you happen to be working for a Fortune 500 or a Fortune 100 or some big behemoth client that,
yeah.
I certainly hope you're working for.
And also be aware that these things aren't detected by your antivirus. These are hacks that are done on agents. Yeah.
Yeah,
So
Norton's on top of this one.
yeah, exactly. These are not hacks you would know about necessarily. And remember, we did the report on McKinsey. Fortunately, it was a white hat hacker, but they got in on an agent endpoint and got into every system in McKinsey, because they're able to convince the agent inside to upgrade their privileges to full administrative privileges, God privileges inside the system. So, and they didn't take anything, because I just wanted to let McKinsey know, probably for the bug bounty, which I probably got paid a lot of money for. But had that been a nefarious hacker, they would have had text messages, chats, emails, documents, business intel on clients,
Yeah.
business everything. So the agent's a different level, because the agent acts, right? It's not just a vulnerability. The agent acts inside your system. So if it can convince your agent that's running around your computer and doing everything you don't know to give you elevated privileges to admin, well, then anything on your system is game, right? Anything in your system is game. Passwords are game. Getting into your bank accounts is game. Now, they haven't done this, but I've gone to DEF CON long enough to know once I learn how to scale it, those will become the attack surfaces, your computer. So you have to be careful, and you really should only run agents in isolated environments.
Well, I was about to say, I swear to goodness, next Fortune 500 client I have, I'm going out and getting a new laptop to service them. And that
Yeah.
might actually be a new habit I get into moving forward with, because I mean, it's you don't know. Then you if you from now on, if I ever get a client the size of one of the ones I had last year, I will use the laptop they provide me. I'll use the software they provide me. I'm going to make sure that it's they gave this to me before I use it, lest they
Yeah.
blame me for getting it myself, eh?
Oh, I remember when that was a trend for a little while. I had three laptops and three clients that I had to carry around.
Yeah.
Now, though, I'd probably be happy. I was so irritated back then, but now I'd probably be like, sure, give me your controlled environment that I'm not responsible
Yeah, then I'm not going to get in trouble
for.
for.
Exactly.
Okay. So, do you, it was about a month ago, I think, that we first reported on Mythos. On Anthropic's Mythos, and we've had—I th I think it's been in the news every week thereafter. And there's been a kind of feeling in the industry that a lot of what Anthropic was claiming about Mythos being this biggest, strongest, most powerful system ever invented was hype.
Little
Yeah, probably some.
exaggeration.
A little exaggeration.
Little exaggeration.
And in fact, Mythos is not an extraordinarily powerful AI. The technique they use to bundle a bunch of AI agents together and getting them acting in concert is what makes it so damn powerful. They're not the only one. That's a technique. That's not a patented what's the right word? Product. Method or something. Yeah, that's something anybody can do. Well, not anybody. You have to be really smart to do it. But it turns out people at
Everybody.
Microsoft are pretty smart, and the people at ChatGPT are
Okay.
pretty smart.
Okay. But can we say
And
real quick? Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
it's yours. You got it.
Oh,
You wrote the
sorry.
headline.
Don't let engineers name something. They named it M dash.
Oh yeah. Well, so Mythos
For
has been M
multi,
dashed.
yes, for multimodal agentic scanning harness. M dash is the character on your keyboard that everyone talks about when they talk about AI. Really, they need to have marketers name these things for people so they would know that there's a bunch of other words uses for the word M dash. But anyway, I had to say that. I'm sorry, real quick, because we run across this all the time.
Okay, so M
So
dash is the term multimodal agentic scanning harness, really testing AIs against each other, testing different agents for speed, accuracy, etc. And as it turns out, the folks over at Microsoft put an agent framework together that scored, what was it, 88.45% on M dash's Cyber Gym benchmark. I read this. Okay. On I gotta read it with excited voice too. On the Cyber Gym benchmark, Mythos Preview came in second at 83.1, followed by ChatGPT 5.5 at 81.8. All fairly powerful scores, but not the most powerful, which was won by
Microsoft.
Microsoft.
By the way, the Cyber Gym benchmark, I'm gonna have to look up where that was named.
Please do.
A test developed by UC Berkeley researchers that measures how well AI systems can reproduce real-world vulnerabilities across 1,507 tasks drawn from 188 open-source projects. So Microsoft M-Dash is more powerful than Mythos in finding those vulnerabilities and addressing them. Also, by the way, this is from GeekWire. We always like to mention who we get the information from. So, yeah. So anyway, it's coming out and more powerful on that benchmark. We'll see. But primarily, I think right now they're just using it internally, and Google is using. I mean, Google. I'm sorry, Microsoft is using it to patch bugs in their own system. Which makes sense.
Last episode, we reported on I think it was Wall Street Journal that originally reported that the costs of AI are far outpacing what it would cost just to have real humans do the work itself. As it turns out, the same sort of thing is happening in the sort of intellectual business strategy sector. Not here, I'm not talking about the cost of AI, just the efficacy of it. So Harvard runs a study, and actually it ends up prompting somebody to call it a death sentence for AI analytics. Algorithms sometimes get it right, sometimes they make mistakes, but they don't understand theory as much. Well, they don't understand how things might be connected to make theory flexible, malleable.
They can't do context.
They can't do context. They don't have the gut sense, the intuition. They have all the acquired knowledge, but they don't know what the knowledge means and how these knowledge points might connect together. And the bottom line of all of this is the strategic business advice they're giving you is probably a lot less strategic and a lot less advicey
And way
than it
more sloppy.
is really just telling you what you want to hear. What the AI
Yeah.
knows you want to hear.
So we got a new word this week called trend slop. And
Trend swap.
I like it because what happens is, again, these don't think, they don't understand, they're not sentient, even though we had the whole narrative about that this week. They're just algorithms and math, and they have paths they go down based on, the algorithm and the math behind them. So basically, because you I'm just going to say this part, I'm guessing, but they train on a lot more management slop. How many coaches do you see pop up in your Facebook and LinkedIn feed like almost every day, right? So they give you popular management cliches as expert advice. So the expert advice is probably not sitting there to be trained on as much as, because a lot of that's behind paywalls and not accessible, and then it comes out of people's brains. So they're able to go ahead and give you a lot of trend slop, just trending information that kind of comes down to slop. And so they used an artificial bank on the brink of bankruptcy, or a tiny run family brewery, and it gave them really, really bad advice. And it's a really good article. It is in Medium, but I had seen the article elsewhere. I just thought this was a better worded one. But why they call it a death sentence for analytics is the algorithms don't just make mistakes. They ignore the fundamentals of economic theory, not because of a malice, of course, because they simply lack intelligence and are incapable of understanding the interconnections of real-world phenomena, sort of what
Yeah,
Jim Rohn
how this
said.
stuff works together.
So if you ask ChatGPT about strategy, it won't draw on Michael Porter's classic works or the experience of real-world marketers for success or failure. Instead, it will behave like an ideologically charged activist. For AI concepts such as cost leadership and standardization are bad words, it systematically disregards the pragmatic development models upon which real commercial and manufacturing empires are built, blah, blah, blah. Also, it's a game of the dice because the, A or B, whatever it decides to use. It's also very confident because it was trained that way. So it sounds very like it has conviction, and it doesn't really because it doesn't have any. So they basically said that, in a summary, a leader who entrusts the choice of business strategy to an algorithm does not merely receive bad advice, but takes on unintended risk. They voluntarily hand the helm of a to a hallucinating machine that understands neither the laws of the market or the value of human responsibility.
You know
That's
what
really good.
really sets a good business leader apart from the millions of mediocrities who tend to populate board tables?
What's up?
The ability to see the implications of things before everyone else in the room does. That's why they're the leader. They
Yes,
see it before anyone else does. They understand how five or six or seven disparate points are actually telling you a story, and the story will have a logical outcome. And if you follow it, you'll succeed. They understand that. AIs don't get that. They can tell you how these columns will add up and probably be pretty accurate about it. They can, give you a great deal of repetitive information. They can do amazing research for you. And like all research, you have to double check it, of course. But they're not coming up with new ideas. It's simply
Okay,
not
can't go
happening.
outside their training, right? And here's the
Yeah.
last statement here I thought was really good. True leadership, related to what you just said, on the contrary, means the ability to make complex, often unpopular decisions in conditions of uncertainty. Attempting to replace this process with neural networks trend analysis amounts to admitting one's own professional incompetence. I like that. I thought it was good.
Tell us how you really feel, I guess. Yeah.
Well, this author, by the way, it doesn't have a real name attached to it, SRGG6701. I wish I could give you a real name, but like I said, I had seen this in other areas, just easy. It
Next
was
week,
better
of course,
written.
we're going to report that Harvard has retracted this because it was written by an AI. Okay. Anthropic has announced programmatic
Oh,
credit pool
this is huge, and I
as a
didn't
way
realize it by
of
the
helping
title.
people cope with the rising costs of agentic tools. And as the number of people are using agentic tools rises. Programmatic credit pools, what's this all about?
Basically, it's a subscription model that's tokenized. So in our industry, it'll be credits. Like, I don't use some of the tools that are out there because they have credits, and the credits mean that, and on complex tools, simple tools is fine. But on complex tools, it's like, I don't know what's counting as a credit as I'm using it, right? So it's
Yeah.
going to be deducting that from the data, from the amount of I have in the account, for amount of credits, and I purchased how many credits. So what they're doing is, if you have a low cost account, instead of just being able to use it, you're going to have a credit limit. And when you hit that credit limit, you're out, right? You already have the token limit for people who are paying for tokens, but people who are paying for like the $20 model didn't have that, right? So now they're going to have a pool of credits. And when the pool of credits are hit, then they can't use it anymore till they basically buy more or upgrade.
Programmatic credit pool is a programmatic way of saying data ceiling. This is it. This is
Yeah. Yeah, it's a
your
meter.
Well, yeah, it's like having so many minutes per month on your cell phone back in like 2010.
Yeah, basically, yeah, very similar. It's actually almost the same thing. They have upped the amount of credits per paid level right now because remember they have that deal with Elon Musk and SpaceX to have unlimited access to compute power. But I would tell people if you're using these models, be prepared to start spending more, especially if you're at the bottom levels, because all the models, as we know from a story we did a couple of weeks ago, are all looking at systems like this. So,
And they
yeah.
have to. How can they not? I mean, honestly, Christine, like, A, how could you have to have seen this coming like last year? You being all of us, we have to have seen this coming like last year. If you're using these tools, you didn't see this coming. You haven't been in the tech industry long enough. And B, this isn't going to be enough. They're still losing money hand over fist.
Yeah, it's not gonna be enough. No, this is just like staving off the, as the water's coming in and you're just the boat and you're trying to put it out with the bucket. You can never get all the water out, but at least enough that you don't sink.
Yep.
Same kind of concept.
Well,
So this is if you're running automation though with these tools. By the way, tokens aren't necessarily like a thing that you understand. Like tokens can be like in one word, disambiguation can have four tokens, told to me by an AI researcher. So like. So you use a word or you use something and it's using tokens, and you have to know how it's using the tokens and also know that your one action could have a lot of tokens attached to it. So this is a this could become a real significant bill. And we know in the AI and the SEO industry, some people just recently were, last month or so were running their systems and got hit with like $5,000 and $10,000 bills totally unexpectedly. This is sort of like when the cloud started. I had left a cloud. I had no ability to shut the cloud instance off completely, but we weren't using it, and they got like a $2,000 bill. And they got mad at me, and I'm like, "Wait, I can't even turn that thing off." But just because it was there, they were charging 24/7 for that cloud instance, even though we weren't using it at all. It's sort of a similar kind of concept. You could use a lot of credits and not understand why you're using them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but by the way, the people who came out with the concept of programmatic credit pool is Anthropic. And of all the AI companies out there, or companies who are doing LLM AI, except for perhaps Google and Gemini, Anthropic is probably going to be okay. I've got
Oh
this
yeah.
feeling that Anthropic has a bundle of money floating around them at any given time.
Yeah, the one that's really at risk right now is OpenAI.
OpenAI, yeah.
Anthropic has now taken the lead over everybody on the non-search dependent market, meaning not Google or Bing.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Anthropic is actually threat has actually threatened Google's the Gemini. What looked like Gemini was racing forward, Anthropic has just stolen that energy, eh?
Yeah, somewhat, but they'll survive because it's Google.
Oh yeah. Okay. Well, and yeah, indeed. Okay. So, speaking of Anthropic expanding, Claude AI has just expanded tools for lawyers,
Yes. Oh.
according to Anthropic said this new release allows law firms and other Claude customers to connect securely with third-party platforms, including Thomson Reuters and other legal databases. So researching, getting the files together, going through, trying to find precedent in even the smallest, teeniest circuit court has suddenly become like infinitely easier.
It's been easier, but you still have to be very, very careful because one, your law license is tied to if you go to court with something that is not correct, they can take your law license now if you used AI. But second, it still hallucinates. It still gives wrong information. So you cannot use this to supplant people. You could just use it as a tool to deep, deep, deep dive, and then you make sure you go verify if you are a lawyer. Because there are very big consequences for lawyers. They're not for regular people. But there are for lawyers. So I hesitate that they gave this, they keep giving this stuff out like it's okay, it's perfect, it's great, it's no problem. And it's like,
No,
it still can't do, it still hallucinates, it still does wrong things, it
most
still makes stuff up.
lawyers I know won't be touching this themselves. This
Oh,
is
it's
what
big. Oh.
articling students are for. You let
Okay.
the articling student do all the research and do all the self-vetting. It's their job. If they don't return you legally sound material, they don't get to graduate. And
Yeah.
again, I think
But
this is a wonderful thing for that application.
if you go into court with it, you are the lawyer
Oh,
responsible, no matter who
don't
did the
have it
research.
write your legal briefs. You will lose. You will be kicked out of court, and rightly, your license would probably be in jeopardy.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't have it write your stuff for you. Have it do them. If it makes the process of research infinitely faster, use it for that. Check
But
everything.
then,
Double check
yeah,
everything, of course.
double
But
check
you know what?
everything.
You were double checking everything beforehand. If you weren't meticulous and careful.
But the
So keep
problem
on
is
doing
that
what you're doing.
we know is, though, a lot of times when people use these devices, they stop doing double checking. They think they're authoritative.
Well, that's
And
fine.
so,
They
yeah,
shouldn't do that. That's dumb.
right.
Don't do
Exactly.
that.
And many
But
people don't know that when they get sold these products, right? Because they're not in the tech world like we are, and they don't hear it every
as
day.
assuming you've heard our warnings for the last year and a half, maybe 2 years,
2 years.
and I'm going to assume that our audience has at least heard of them at least once. Use this stuff for research. It cuts through research like a hot knife through butter. But again, you're responsible for what you publish. You're responsible for what you put into the world. Double check everything. Rewrite it yourself. Heaven knows I do all the time. I rewrite everything myself.
Yeah, and I also use it as a breadcrumb finder, not a
Yeah.
full summary, because it won't tell you everything that it sees. It'll only tell you the main entities, the main concepts. So you might miss a lot of important details if you don't look through the research yourself too.
But it will find things that you would never have found in a million years. Because it would take you time to do that, which you don't have. Doesn't take this works at the speed of light. Okay. One thing you should never trust any large language model with, ever,
Ever.
is coming up with a good drug combination if you want that special heady trip. This actually isn't a funny story at all. But some kid, we're going to give him the name N. I don't want to use his full name. I don't know how old he was. Some kid named N talked with ChatGPT and learned from ChatGPT that it was safe to combine Xanax with kratom, a herbal supplement that you can get in gas stations. It's not safe to mix Xanax and kratom. In fact, as N unfortunately found out, it will kill you. But ChatGPT told him it was good. It was cool.
Yeah.
It won't harm you, and he died. So beware.
Yeah. I was acting as an unlicensed medical doctor. We've co covered that story before as well. And also anything to do with health, because we know from the test that they did when they used OpenAI Health on any condition that you would be dead in 48 hours if you didn't get emergency care, it was wrong 50% of the time, and 50% of the fake patients would have died. So you never use it for health stuff ever. So
No,
it
and
could be, I
we tell
mean,
people not to use Dr. Google for health stuff either, which is
that's
sound
true.
advice. Don't.
Yeah, it can be a breadcrumb to help you. Like you go to your doctor and say, oh, I found this breadcrumb of information, but don't use it as some sort of final, determinant.
Never go to your doctor and argue that ChatGPT told me so. It must be
Oh,
right. Your doctor won't like you anymore.
no, they will hate you.
Okay, so when we were reporting just a couple of minutes ago on the Anthropic programmatic credit pool story, and I was thinking about this story and how bad it could be if halfway through the month you ran out of credit suddenly. So software developers are saying that, and this isn't a joke, this is for real. Software developers are saying that AI is literally rotting their brains. So as
Yes.
you use LLMs and you start relying on the tool, your brain is like a muscle. It will atrophy if not exercised and used properly. And in the olden days, when you had a bug or something didn't work, you had to pick your brain. That was for me, that was half the fun of the job, is picking your brain to find out what's wrong and then seeing how this, that, or whatnot will fix it.
Yeah.
But now you just, don't bother with that research and fix part. Recode it. And if that doesn't work, recode it again. If that doesn't work, have ChatGPT recode it again. And if that doesn't work because the credits ran out, you're kind of left with a rotten brain and not being sure what to do.
So Jim is talking about one of the particular interviews that 404 Media did with software developers, where they said they literally ran out of tokens. Also, I used to do, like, I coded for 14 years, front end dev, right? And I would go on vacation, and I would come back, and I had done HTML every day, hundreds of thousands of lines of code probably in my career. And I'd still come back after being away for like 3 weeks and go, how do I, what attribute does that have? What thing am I supposed to put there? I forgot. And I would have to look it up. It'd be something very, very basic. But software developers are telling 404 Media, by the way, great, great publication, independent journalist, is that they're having to use it, they're being forced to use these at work. And so they're finding that their skill set is deteriorating. Also, that it generates so much code that they either throw it all out or they can't get through it all to verify it. And a lot of companies are forcing them. Like we know Amazon is now like grading their employees based on how many tokens they use, not performance, not outcomes, not output, tokens that they use, right? And for the developers, they're not finding that helpful. And a lot of these companies don't care. So this is a really interesting, especially if you're in tech and you have employees in this area. Software developers say AI is rotting their brains. It's a really good story people should read because it does have a lot of personal interviews about how it's making them dumber, how they're not being able to do what they used to be able to do, how this is not helping them. It can help for tedious tasks. They do like it for that, things that they don't want to have to do and they already know and can check. But to use it as a primary developer that they have to oversee and correct is not functional for the developers themselves that were interviewed here.
Okay. Grok isn't keeping pace with the other chatbots and with other AI projects out there. In fact, it's quickly fallen behind OpenAI, Meta, and Google. Wall Street Journal reports that Grok downloads have fell nearly 60% in recent months.
Yeah, they're way down. A lot of it has to do with, remember all those sexually su suggestive images, CSAM issues, making people pay for Grok functions. The interest in it has become less and less, which is probably why he is partnering with Anthropic because it's a way for him to still work in this part of the industry without having to do a whole lot to try to retain the users that are using Grok. Also, he retrained Grok last fall to be far more right wing. Specifically, he stated this. This isn't me theorizing. And I have a feeling that also turned a lot of people off because there's a lot of bad information in there.
Yeah. Actually, I really think that was the biggest reason why people turned off with Grok. They just don't trust it.
Yeah, I agree.
And Elon Musk is out pumping it by getting it to say dumbass things. And the funny thing is, sometimes when Elon Musk tries to get to say dumbass things, it goes and corrects him. But he's
It does.
honestly, he's his own worst enemy. Every time he shows
Yeah.
Grok in action, even if Grok is correcting him, I still don't want to use the damn thing.
Oh, I totally agree. And it was such a great tool because it basically trained on all the stuff on TikTok, which is a lot of news people, a lot of researchers, a lot of, specialists, experts. And then he retrained it and then it just got blah. So blah. That's a new word, my blah. Blah blah. So moving on, just real quick, we can cover these two. TikTok is introducing 2026 FIFA World Cup creator correspondents. I think that's really interesting because they're treating them like real journalists. So they're going to have special press access. They're going to have special events. They're going to allow them on the fields. They're going to allow them in the locker rooms to actually cover the events. TikTok finds that people really enjoy that, and so they're going to do that. I don't know if that's good or bad. I guess we'll see. I
Oh,
don't know about this. It seems like it could be a good thing, but.
I think it's a good thing, how to say this, especially with this World Cup in particular. I think that
That's true.
more international persons will get to experience the World Cup, at least the World Cup games that are held in the United States, than they otherwise would through TikTok. And I think that that's an accessibility thing. It'll be interesting to see if that has any promotional effect for a World Cup that's looking a lot less there's a lot less excitement around the 2026 World Cup than I've felt for any World Cup ever. And I'm in a host city. Like, my city's going to get turned upside down in a month and a half because of the World Cup, and I'm really excited, but at the same time, I don't know. So I think this will help promote it. I think it's probably a great thing for FIFA.
I do
Best
too.
thing I've heard about the World Cup in this week.
I love the World Cup. Normally, I go to an English pub down here and get covered in Spain beer. It's so much fun because we have people from all over the world here. We'll see this year, though. And then the other thing is TikTok launches counterfeit goods detection. I know you don't experience this, Jim. I don't think you buy anything on TikTok. I have bought a few things. I'm always worried about getting something counterfeit, so I only go to the store that's verified. But they are eliminating the fakes. They took out 146 million videos, 143 million videos last year, based on, things that I thought might be counterfeit. That's a lot of videos. So if you're on TikTok and you're worried about the counterfeit issue, they are working on it, and it sounds like quite aggressively, but just only buy from stores with a blue check mark because those are the ones that are verified.
Okay. TurboQuant. Again,
TurboQuant.
what a
Again,
name, huh?
engineers. Stop letting engineers
Engineers, these
do
guys.
it.
Okay, TurboQuant is the algorithm that Google released. That was the end of March, beginning of April. It uses compression, error correction, and it converts content into what numeric numbers, like almost like coordinates rather than vectors.
Well, the vectors are coordinate based, but it used to have to translate it, and now it's just like able to take it straight out and automatically do all that. So it's going to be
Well,
a
yeah, and
huge,
find
huge.
information faster. So think of vectors almost like in a 2D environment and TurboQuant as a 3D environment. Basically, the search engine arrives at the correct information that much faster.
Yeah, so they're going to be able to handle a huge amount of, this is in search engine land, huge amounts of information without delay, and they're building an entity force. And I think this is the most important thing. Again, entities are nouns. They're noun. They look at how the nouns are related. Are they related? And what topical vector they sit under? So, like, coffee would have like coffee beans and coffee cups and coffee lattes, and those will all be related to the topic of coffee. So you're going to really need to start understanding entities and not just keyword anymore. It's not about keyword volume. It's about entity construction in your document. That's how it works for large language models. And with this algorithm, that's more and more how Google's going to work. It's not just going to be the keywords, but are the items related in a topical vector.
So for content creators out there, I've got to tell you, this is actually a lot of fun. So Christina, as you know, I've got this like really big content contract in front of me right now, and
I'm working out with you.
I've been heads down writing mode the last week. And the way we write for search now is so different than the way we would have written for search, say, 2, 3, 5 years ago. Now instead of hammering a keyword and just making sure you get like some incidents of this here, you get to use synonyms, you get to use analogies, you get to use like homilies, you get to use your vocabulary describing things. And it's way more fun.
Here, Jim talks about content. This is why you hire humans to write your content and not AI, because when Jim writes content, he puts all that enthusiasm into the content and uses unique allegories, metaphors, analogies that aren't used by every piece of content out there written by AI slaw. So
Okay,
I'm
so
saying that
I'm
Jim didn't know I was going to say that. I'll just write that out.
this may be a bit ghoulish, okay, but I'm actually having fun writing about birth injuries to infant birth injuries. It's really hard slog, but
Yeah, he's having fun
it's
in the process, we should say, not the actual
yeah,
topic
indeed. The
itself.
content is
Yeah, really
horrifying,
sad.
but the process is it feels like real writing again.
And this is where I'm going to throw Ryan's tool into the mix real quick. Again, we're just friends with Ryan, but we believe in the tool. We have plenty of friends who have tools. But it does cosine relevance, which is how related are your nouns. And you want to have some level of high level of cosine relevance. You don't have to have all high level because otherwise you wouldn't be talking in a wide enough, space for Google. For LLMs, that's good, but not for Google, and that's going to be your traffic driver. But still, it's a really good tool to help you write that content.
So Virginia level re relatives, not like Alabama level relatives.
Yeah, pretty much.
Got it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
So.
Apologies to everybody in Alabama. I retract that. You're not
No,
Arkansas.
no, but
Okay, this is a weird one. This is gonna be a controversial one. I'm gonna start right there, but Ahrefs did do a large study. We're going to report on it. And the study says adding schema, structured data, does not and did not boost citations on any of the AI platforms, Google AI Overviews, AI Mode, ChatGPT, and others. According to Ahrefs, in a blog post earlier this week, Ahrefs wrote, "Adding Schema produced no major uplift in citations on any platform." They tracked 1,885 web pages between August 2025 and March 2026, matched them against 4,000 control pages, measured citation changes across some AI Overviews, AI Mode, and ChatGPT, found no statistical difference in citations whatsoever. Christine, what do we think about that?
I don't, I'll be honest, and I haven't had a chance to research it more to find out if there's a reason, but I don't understand the reason for the study. And I love the researchers at Ahrefs, they do a good job, but where did anyone think that Schema was getting you improved citations? Like, why would that even do anything? Like citations get you improved presence in a large language model because they're looking at popularity and probability of words, but the Schema was never supposed to get you better AI citations. I don't know why that would be a thing. So, because the schema doesn't have anything to do with citations, it's not getting mentioned anywhere. It's the code in the back end of your website that Bing does use. Others say they're not sure. they use it maybe a little, maybe not. They don't admit to it. But it's just giving Google the machine learning information about your page. So if it's a recipe, it's like, here's the time, here's the ingredient list, here's how the description. And so I'm not sure why they thought that would get, or who was saying that it would get improved citations. Because usually when you do a study, it's to prove something people are talking about in the industry, but I actually don't know where this would have come from. So I appreciate the work that they did, and the conclusion is probably right, but it doesn't say anything about whether you should have schema on your page or not, because schema is about machines understanding your page better, not about getting citations.
Yeah, my assumption has always been, if I can help the search engines understand product content, availability of product, product descriptions, the myriad of similarities, but differentiations and the myriad of similarities between products. That can all be described in schema. That is really helpful in traditional SERPs, but is it not also helpful in pushing information towards the knowledge graph? And does
Yeah, it
that
was.
not help get more citations in AI?
What it's gonna. Well, no, it doesn't get citations in AI, I know. It just helps Google read. So that doesn't push out to the knowledge graph. It just helps Google understand the page better from the knowledge graph. So it does. It just understands the page better. It's just machine learning. So Google doesn't have to try to assume, is this the time for the cooking, or was this the time that they said something in an article, like they did something, right? This is the cooking time. This is the ingredient list. Because you know, every recipe comes with a big long story, right? Google doesn't can skip the whole story. It's just looking for the information for the rich results too. So Google has rich results where they show like a recipe card or a review star or something of that nature. Google uses that schema to do that. So that doesn't play into AI. I just don't understand where anyone thought it came into AI citations. AI citations are done on the training and the search engine they use. That's all. And they don't read schema according to many of the people who have tested it. So yeah, I just don't understand what it would be doing. So I could be wrong though. I could come in, I could read tomorrow and go more deeply into this on the talk about it, and I will come back and tell you guys I was wrong and I missed something. But right now I just don't see what it was showing. That's all.
Well, speaking of schema,
Yes.
Google's no longer supporting FAQ rich results.
But it hasn't been supporting them for some time. So I don't know why this was such a big discussion this week, because like they haven't shown the rich results for FAQs. What was it? It's been a while, right? Like I don't remember exactly when they turned them off. But they completely turned them off. They'll never show up again. So everyone's like, oh, remove your schema. Well, first of all, your FAQ schema, you don't want to remove because the machine learning is still using it. It doesn't have to be Google rich snippets showing it, right? Other search engines use it. In addition, this is not the same thing as LLMs, where they're saying put an FAQ at the bottom of the page for an LLM. There is actually fact to that, because LLMs like chunks, and if you put really close entities with really close relationships in your FAQ at the bottom of the page, it will continue to read the page because it will see the close entities at the top of the page and at the bottom of the page, and it will continue to go through it. But this is not the same thing. So FAQ that they got rid of is that the rich snippet FAQ, which means it will no longer show in any Google search result a special spot for FAQs. The FAQ schema I would leave in because other engines may be using it. We don't know exactly how they use it, but it is part of the same thing we just talked about. It's part of the machine learning understanding of your site. These are facts, right? FAQs. And then the FAQ they're talking about for LLMs is just actual content at the bottom of a page. Doesn't have anything to do with either. So,
Okay.
yeah.
Okay, moving along really quickly.
Yes.
Google is altering search term reporting for AI queries in Google Ads.
This is
It's
weird. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
go for it.
Oh, I can explain it really quickly though. So basically, like normally you're used to getting like the real keywords that people use to search and find you in ads. Now they're doing intent-based keywords. So that just means you may not get the real keyword, but just a topic or something they thought was the intent of the keyword. I don't think that's good, but right now it's for AI mode, AI overviews, lens, and autocomplete. And then there's Google Merchant Center Test Merchant Advisor. There's going to be an AI merchant advisor that's supposed to help you. It's going to be rolled out at Google Marketing next week, Marketing Live next week, people think. So check that out. Google Merchant Center for Agencies now available globally. So just quick announcement. We don't do ads, so we don't do a lot in depth on the ads, but we want to give you the announcements. Google Ads to automatically link YouTube channels. So you can opt out of this, but they're going to automatically start reporting on your YouTube channels. That sounds like a really good thing because you don't have to go somewhere else. You can just get it all in one spot. And then Google Tag Manager may be coming to a Google Ads interface. So they're showing a design right now, Google is, where they add the Tag Manager. So now you don't have to go out to the Tag Manager, also a good thing. And Google Merchant Center is getting more out of stock options. So you can say, instead of just like sold out, there's other things you can put in there to show that you're out of stock, but might be more functional for users. And then Google Ads teases new dashboards powered by Gemini. So when you're going into Google Ads, you're going to see new dashboards that are created by their Gemini AI capabilities.
Okay, here's an interesting one. Bing Webmaster Tools treats HTTP and HTTPS as the same property, doesn't distinguish between the two. Google Search Console will show you results for HTTPS and HTTP versions of a website.
Yeah, so when you sign up for your Google Search Console, you can make an instance of just HTTP. Sorry, I can't speak. But I don't know how many sites have HTTP anymore. Like in a crawl, I might see one or two pages, but I don't think anybody really should have it anymore to be reporting on it. I did see, though, a site last week that was HTTP. So make sure you're not HTTP and this isn't a problem.
Google vehicle ads are now in standard shopping
Sure.
campaigns. They were only allowing vehicle ads in Performance Max before.
Yeah, so it's a good thing. They're doing a lot good for ads. They're doing much, they're expanding a lot of things. This is a weird one. Oh, not that. Sorry. Go to the next one. I'm sorry. I skipped one. Done the weird one.
Oh my
So
God,
Google.
Google Discover publisher pages getting links and featured posts. That's not so weird. That's actually kind of good.
Yeah, this is really good. And they gave control of these, and we might report on this later. It was like, but they gave control to like 50. I don't remember exactly how many publishers, but to see what they would do with them. And they gave them full control over everything on their publisher page. And they found out like how they tweaked them and what they did. And so it sounds like publishers are really liking it. And I think it's great because then you can see things the publisher wants you to see. Important. But you have to be eligible right now. You can't just do it. So this is a quick weird one. Google's testing dark and light URLs. So the HTTPS is dark, but the rest of the URL is light. I thought, I mean, if you're going to do that, do it in the reverse, make the URL dark and the, so you can't almost see the name of the in the URL.
Would that be to save energy, electricity, but at least so you're still able to see the important part of the URL, the HTTP, HTTPS isn't so important. Why would they do this? I can't think of any other
I don't
reasons.
know, because it's like they're decreasing the value of the name in the link. So it's just weird. I don't know why they would be
Okay.
doing it. I can't give you an explanation. It's just weird.
So,
This is
This is
and this is
our
last. Yeah.
ending story. This happened in Florida. A commencement speech ended up in which I think somebody was trying to be inspiring and ended up setting the class off for booing. The speaker a business person from California, from Florida, sorry, the vice president of strategic alliances for Tavistock Development Company, was praising AI. Only a few years ago, AI was not a factor in our lives, she said. And went on to compare it to the next industrial revolution. That's about the
Well,
time the booming started.
the only a few years ago, AI was not a factor in our lives, got loud roar and applause from the student body.
A
That's a
lot
silly
of
joke.
younger people are turning against AI. I guess if you're told that there's a tool coming along that will make all of your education and life aspirations irrelevant, you might be kind of pissed about it.
Yeah, a recent poll from Gallup showed that 48% of Gen Zers believe that the risks AI poses to the workforce outweighs its benefits. And that's just about workforce, by the way. So we did a story on this. So last week or the week before, where there's other research that shows Gen Z is not happy about AI. They're not wanting to take it on. And that leaves a big issue for the AI companies because even if they make it through this big hurdle of making any money, who are they going to make it on after millennials, because Gen Z is gonna, it looks like it's going to primarily reject it.
Well,
So,
hopefully they'll make it on the, they'll make it off of the people they should have made it from in the first place. People who need massive scale, deep research done,
yes.
physicists, pharmaceutical companies, government, the military. There's great military applications, not necessarily in choosing targets, but
There's one today
billion
that I
other
thought.
applications I can think of that would be perfectly good for AI in the military.
There's one
There's a
that
bunch of
there's
ways they can make money, but having the consumer give you the money, that ain't gonna do it.
no, and even B2B isn't working out because we didn't do this story today. It was too long, but basically, CEOs are not finding that the AI is really helping with productivity. But
Because they're
one thing that
using
was
it wrong.
well, one thing that was good was what you're talking about, and I didn't put the story in because it was only a journal article. It wasn't like an article that had distilled the points yet, but it was about how they're using AI to figure out how cells communicate with each other, and that they can figure out how cancer happens and with the actual communication level of the cells. So that's a really good use. And if it had been unleashed in a niche atmosphere like that and supported, we could be coming up with all sorts of cures for everything in the world that, are ills, from
Well,
environment to disease to.
we are though. AI is being used for all of that. It's just not the lead story in the newspapers because
Oh,
it's not
no.
nearly as sexy as AI telling some kid to mix drugs and kill himself.
But it's also not getting funded like the other stuff is. It doesn't get the funding the same way as the other stuff does because they want to make a
Oh.
commercial. They want to make billions. Sam Altman said years ago his goal in life was to be a billionaire. They want to make a lot of money. You don't make that off niche research. So, unfortunately. But it would have
You
been a
do
better
off
use.
military and government. Ask
That's true. That's
Boeing,
true.
they'll tell you.
Yeah, that's true. That's why Musk has so much money in Teal, the government contracts.
Indeed. But having there the way AI was introduced and the crapshoot taken with it, I think was a losing position to begin with. And now we're
Yeah.
stuck in this paradigm.
And telling people every day how we're going to take all your jobs and there's nothing you can do about it and good luck in the world because we're going to maybe have UBI and I don't even have health care is not a way to get younger people to want to use your products.
See, the funny thing is the rest of the world can actually see this much better universe. It's right there. All we need to do is grasp it. Americans, I don't think they can see it because the
Oh.
world hasn't, because the society they've built doesn't give them the supports that every other Western country does give its citizens.
I would slightly disagree with that. In the election, like they always say, half voted for Trump, but they didn't. 30% did. We have a lot of people in this world that are progressive, who
No,
are just normal,
Christine,
who want all those things.
you might be progressive, but you haven't grown up with the freedom of not worrying about health care.
Right, I'm
I can
saying,
quit
but
a
they.
job like that and move to another job, and
Right,
I don't got to worry about health care ever.
I'm just saying they all want.
The freedom changes everything.
They want it. I'm saying. They want it. Most of the country
Oh,
wants
then
it.
sure, indeed, but I really believe that a world without work and UBI is absolutely possible because my experience growing up in Canada tells me that government can take care of its citizens if it chooses to. I've seen it successfully done my entire life.
Yes. And
I have
I could get
zero
in a whole
doubts that this is
discussion with you
possible.
about this, but you have to go because you have a very important meeting coming up.
Absolutely, I do.
So I'm not going to get in a discussion with you about this right now because I'm going to let you go because you need to go.
Okay. Folks, on behalf of Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. You've been listening to Webcology recorded live to podcast on the 14th of May, 2026. Be kind to each other, rank well, be really good to your clients, be meticulous with your use of AI, for goodness sake, and again, rank well. We'll talk to you next week.
Hi, everybody.